potentially comedic performance of The Nightmare Before Christmas, just to avoid any copyright issues. And it is a retelling of my favorite 1993 Tim Burton stop motion film. I reenact the entire movie with some witty commentary and provocative opinions about the film, which is a favorite of mine, hence the tattoo I have on my arm.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's just The Nightmare Before Christmas, but done by one person. I'm everybody from the Oogie Boogie Man, a giant sack of bugs, to Jack Skellington, the Pumpkin King.
Are you sweating pretty good at the end of that?
Oh, yeah.
Because doing a one-hander is, it's something, eh? I mean, there's no, you know, you can't stand there and breathe for a second while somebody else is doing their thing. You got to keep going. Everybody's got their eyes on you.
I'm a bit of a sadist, I think. Like, I love it. I love the challenge. I love setting myself up for it and then getting her done. And my opener was a little rough, getting the pacing and the heat in check. But last night I had a fantastic show, so I'm feeling really good about the rest of the run.
I remember the first time I did a one-person show, being backstage and hearing the sound of the audience filing in, and a little voice in the back of my head said, "Well, Brent, if you screw up, nobody can save you." So kudos.
You've only got yourself to blame.
It's all on you. Goodbye.
And there was nobody there to criticize you but yourself. Mm. I've been to New York a number of times, and when I go, I always go to see something on Broadway, and I went to see Fela, the musical, The Life of Fela Kuti. Mm. And I couldn't figure out in the program, it said there was two, the part was being shared, and it was every other day, and I couldn't figure out why. But I mean, the guy who played Fela Kuti was just like ran around the whole time, and he was just completely soaked by the end of it. And I thought it didn't even seem like it would be humanly possible for somebody to do that every single day. So they just had to they had two different guys doing that. I thought was very interesting. But you have nobody that's going to spare you off.
I've got nobody.
Brent, your show is called Fuck, Marry, Kill, and I don't think it's called Fuck. Is it called Fuck, Marry, Kill?
It is called Fuck, Marry, Kill. It
you
is.
Can't. Yeah. Say that though, right?
Well, we can say it. I just don't know whether it can be printed in the program.
Right. And I have just said it now on the radio three yes. times. And that is an improv show. And that is how many? Well, this is left to right and then like this. So you've already had three shows.
Yeah, we just had our third show last night.
You have a show tonight at 9. You're over at the King's Head. Mm-hmm. And this is starring Jeff Gladstone, Ashley Farrell, Brent Hirose, and Sarah Ferguson. And there is a picture on the back of somebody strangling someone.
Oh, you've got the kill card. There you go.
The kill card. Oh, they're all different?
Yes, they are.
Oh, my God, that's fun.
Yeah.
Oh, and the... Oh. Got the F card there, and you can see what's happening there.
Yeah, so you're familiar.
Sorry I showed that to y'all.
You're familiar with the game, yes.
Yes, yeah. How did this come about?
So this is part of a theater company that I'm involved with in Vancouver called Tightrope Theater. Jeff Gladstone is one of the artistic heads of the company. And every year we do something called the Fling Festival, where the idea is we're throwing ideas at the wall and seeing what sticks. And so Jeff had been playing around with this idea about there's a very classic improv game called Sexy, Silly, Stinky.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, what if we sort of combined this with the classic drinking game FMK, Fuck, Marry, Kill. So the idea behind it is that we talk to the audience, but this is sort of like informal before the show. So this is not one of those improv shows where we're drawing people up on stage. It's a very just like, come to the King's Head, grab a beer, grab some food, and watch a funny show. We take some conversations that we've had just casually before the show and create characters based off of that. And then these characters, we get drawn those desires for each other. So I might be madly in love with somebody who wants to kill me. If that happens, I'll just play that, you know, from my life experience. I might be looking at somebody who I want to marry who just wants to have a one-night stand. And so all these interconnected dynamics sort of play out over the course of an hour-long show at one of the coolest venues in the festival.
And I won't ask you how it's going because people love improv and, you know, it's easy to sell. But you, you're originally from Winnipeg.
I am, yes.
So it must be is nice, I guess, to come back and hang out with your friends. And,
yeah,
or do people
absolutely
not want to talk to you anymore?
Well, you know what? Honestly, there's a little bit of the balance between trying to see friends and family and promote a show and whatever. But part of the reason...
So you've been big timing a few people.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
As one must. But... no, seriously, it's really nice to have like all that stuff to do. And part of the reason why I came back for this festival, for this show, is this was a show that I didn't have to produce. So I had applied for some other shows. I was thinking of bringing my improvised Shakespeare company back, but we didn't get in. So the opportunity to come and just like just be in a show.
Be a hired gun piece of meat. Yeah, yeah, just come and do your thing. And...
Please,
nice.
Any time of the day, sign me up.
That nice. Sounds really nice.
Yeah. That was exciting. Allie, are you a bit jealous?
It sounds really nice. I am. I'm a bit of a control freak when it comes to Fringe, which is like why I like doing one-handers. Yeah. I teach public high school, so I produce theater for kids all throughout the year with kids.
Yeah.
And that is so collaborative, it makes you want to throw yourself off a building a little bit. And so I
so you really just want to tell everybody what to do.
I just want to do it kind of all by myself and and do all the things. But then of course I regret it when I'm exhausted and old lady tired by the end of the day.
The worst part of doing a one person show and being in charge is when you tell yourself to do a thing and then you don't do it. Yeah.
So do you have trouble ever, Allie, keeping yourself on point and or once you're into something, you're just in it and you just go until you're, as you say, old lady tired?
You know, I'm an improviser by nature. Like as an artist, I've done some of the Wind City comedy jams this year, and I've been doing Canadian improv games many moons ago, coaching, doing improv my entire life. And I think that's also the reason I like doing a one-hander, is because I read the audience. I try things. If they don't work, yeah, I'm going to pivot a little bit for the next show, maybe try something else. And it's hard to do that with a company production.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and I think reading the room is its own thing that a lot of people don't have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can, whether it's improv or stand up or whatever.
Real life. Yeah.
Real life. Yeah. You know what? Honestly, I actually just used that term yesterday to... we do a little every September long we do a little thing called Sizzle Mania, which is a few of us out in a field in the middle of nowhere, and it's kind of a little micro festival, I call it, and it's music and drag and various things like that. But this guy showed up last year who, I guess it was my fault because I told him where we were going to be, but he was completely this middle-aged white guy who was got super drunk and super high and then was so disruptive. Ooh. and but one of those people who will stand there and like kind of like suck the life out of you for like just until you like run away, like no, like for hours. And there were a few people that couldn't get away from him because they were either too polite or too high themselves. Ooh. And they were kind of stuck there, and I actually messaged him and said, you can't come back this year. And I did use the expression reading the room because I was like, he just, you know, just like, yeah, like, so in life, like just one of those people that just didn't realize nobody wanted to talk to him. Mm-hmm. And he did not, he had no idea about that.
Harsh on the vibe, man. Harsh on the vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but as a performer, I mean, you have to bring your audience along with you. So, mm-hmm. Is the audience with you, Allie?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, I am improvising every single day in my day job, so to speak.
Is it because you don't know what you're doing?
Yeah, 100%. I just moved from a middle school position, which is even more chaotic, into a high school position.
Yeah.
And every day I'm just winging it, and you never know what's going to happen with those kids. And so you got to adapt and switch and pivot and switch and pivot. And that's what I do in the show, too.
Are you a good teacher?
I think so.
Yeah.
I like to think so.
Yeah. Did you go into it on purpose?
Yeah. I found a passion for teaching when I was in high school, and I was given some opportunities to coach some younger kids in improv and sort of help out some other students, because I've been a theater kid since I was 4 years old.
Yeah.
I did MTYP on Princess Street in the old building.
Wow.
We thought we were all going to die in. So
was it still Actors Showcase?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you are old. Holy yeah. smokes.
I just wear a lot of makeup to look younger.
No, you look great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and then it just sort of was a natural progression. I love performing arts so much that if I can impart that on some young people who can jive with that and find that passion as well, that's all I really want to do. And then sell tickets to the Fringe, of course.
it's hard. I mean, once you get in, when you're I was seven when I was in my first show, and it was Lil Abner at Vincent Massey.
Yeah.
And I just had this little bit where somebody picks me up and sticks me on a barrel, and then the curtain closes, and I'm you know, whatever. I was there, and I remember one time the curtain closed behind me because I guess the barrel was in the wrong place. And I remember that. I don't remember anything from when I was seven except being on stage and something going wrong. So really, I mean, there was no, you know, that dream that regular people have, which is the I've got a course and I haven't read the stuff and I don't know what it is. I have the actor's dream, which is I'm in a show and I don't have my costume and I don't know my lines because I haven't practiced, and I spend either the whole dream running around looking for a script or looking for my costume, and I never actually get to the show. Do you have a version of that?
Well, let me tell a story about this, because I when I lived in Winnipeg, I did the Winnipeg Fringe for about a decade. New show every single year, yeah. Sometimes multiple shows. And every year coming up to the Fringe, I would have that actor's nightmare about my show not being finished, about me having no idea what to do. And I have produced like a bunch of non-improv shows mm-hmm. at the festival, and when I got really, really good at improv, I had one of those dreams, and then I went, oh, I can just wing it, and then I never had those dreams again.
Yeah,
so if you're an actor out there who wants to feel a little bit more confident, take an improv class.
Just do improv.
It seriously has helped a lot.
It's so true.
Allie, do you ever have that dream?
Oh yeah, all the time. I have that dream while I'm awake, I think, before I'm about to do things. Yeah, absolutely I do. And I've had some horrendous experiences. Once I was doing a play at MTYP summer camp at the old building on Princess, and I had a big opening scene and everybody's family was there and my dress popped down.
Oh, no.
I kept performing and we pinned it in the back, and that was the moment where I was like, yeah, I can pretty much get through anything. That was the most embarrassing moment of my entire young teenage life, and I survived.
The show must go on.
It
is interesting, Brent, you're talking about just improv kind of changing your perspective on things, because I've done a bit of theater over the years, but I've always been the last guy on book. And I've found out later that I've got ADHD and I've got a lot of trouble like memorizing things and the director would always be mad at me because I'd always be the last person walking around with my script. So I mean, I like being on stage, but I kind of hate the idea of that. So but when I'm on stage and I'm doing something, hosting something, and that's kind of mostly what I do now, I'm very happy to do that kind of boom, boom, boom. You know, we'll see what's going on in the room. We'll see what's going on right here. And we kind of go with the whole thing. And I really like that. But that whole kind of, I honestly don't even know if I could remember something anymore. Do you ever, are you good at memorizing things, Allie?
Oh man, fuck scripts. Pardon my, can I say that on
you
here?
You just did, yeah,
I
and I think
did.
We said fuck, marry, kill
oh,
about
goodness, I'm a high
eight
school
times.
Teacher, won't say for which school.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wrote this show myself. I write a show myself, and then I panic and freak out about remembering it. It's not my wheelhouse. I find it really, really difficult, and you just figure out your own sort of strategies for it, but definitely some of my strategies are learn the basic gist of it, and then improvise, which is why I don't think I would do well with like a show that you have to do the way it's written. I think I would kind of suck at that.
Yeah, waiting for somebody's cue line when they've done a reasonable facsimile of it three times in a row can be very stress-inducing. That is one of my superpowers as a performer. I am very good and very quick at memorizing things. The trick with that, though, is that for a lot of people who are quick at memorizing, it means that they will often lock in their sort of first impulses, their first ideas, their most base and surface level take on
first things. Thought, best thought.
And as an instructor myself, I teach acting and improv at a bunch of places, most notably Vancouver Film School. So like I get to spend a lot of time with young people who are, you know, wanting to make a career in the arts, wanting to make a career as an artist, as an actor. And yeah, it's nice to have had such a breadth and depth of experience, a lot from the fringe that I get to bring into the classroom. And
are you a good teacher, Brent?
I think so. I get good reviews. But I think more than anything, I try to create an atmosphere in the classroom, especially when I'm teaching improv. I'm there to teach them improv skills, but I'm also there to teach them that, like, learning as an actor is not a one and done kind of thing. It's a continual process that they're going to be going through. And so I'm trying to create ensemble, make them comfortable with each other, feel like they can be safe to take risks, and then just have a good time together. And if they can do that, like, ultimately, I think they'll have more learning when they're having fun doing stuff than they would if they're like eating their vegetables and like, you know, sitting there sweating stuff out, stressed about things. I honestly understand there's some things that, you know, you need to get right 100% of the time, but it's the arts. Nothing is right, but taking risks and throwing yourself into it, you're going to have a more productive time than otherwise.
Brent, this is the thing that everyone wants to know about. Tell us about the squared circle.
The squared circle, yes. Yeah. So I am also, most recently in the last 7 months now, a professional wrestler. So I decided I wanted to have...
Allie, that was great. She didn't know what
Allie didn't
say.
Know, so this is great. I decided I wanted to have the most interesting midlife crisis possible. So at the
That's
age
amazing.
Of 39, I started training to be a wrestler. At the age of 40, I started wrestling, and now at the age of 41, I am a tag team champion as part of my tag team, the Moral Panic. Myself, Ren Yoshino, and Top Speed Tommy Chan, the fastest rising tag team in the Pacific Northwest. We're also the winners of the Big Cat Scott Hansen Memorial Tournament from Boom Pro Wrestling, and we are coming for you, Winnipeg. So, WPW, CWE, there's other ones, Primos, any wrestling companies out there, you better hire us, because my sisters want me to visit my little nephews more.
What are you going to do when the 18-inch pythons come down on you?
That's right, brother. Let's go.
And so where do you get to go? What kind of places do you get to go?
Well, I got to train at the Lionsgate Dojo, which is an awesome training facility in Surrey, British Columbia, so just outside of Vancouver. Yeah. Really, really great people there. And that opened up tons of doors for us. Yeah. So myself and my tag team partner, we have gone all over BC. We have wrestled for Big West Pro Wrestling, for Boom Pro Wrestling, All-Star Wrestling, NEW, Nation Extreme Wrestling. We've gone down into the States, gone down to Combat Pro Wrestling, gone down to Peak Sports Entertainment, down to Reactivate Pro Wrestling, and a bunch more that I'm forgetting. So thus far, Pacific Northwest, but we're expanding outwards.
My my old neighbor, and he was my helper for moving things a few years ago, I found out that he was an amateur, sort of like, you know, that kind of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And his name was Vinny Valiant, and he did these little promotions where you get $50 to do the thing, and you're going, you know, you're up in the res or wherever you are. And I went to see him once over at it was the Indian Métis Friendship Center or somewhere, and like I had never actually been to a wrestling
like
show,
a live event,
an event, and like some of the people like were just so into it. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the like the audience were just like, and there was, you know, there was one guy who was like in the audience who, you know, was kept high-fiving everybody as they were coming up, and he was booing the heels, and it was just like so gonzo. I mean, there was what was the guy's name? Caveman something. There was an old guy who wore a little purple Speedo.
Oh,
and I imagine when he started, he wasn't an old man, but it just was so interesting to me. Why did you think you wanted to do that? Because it's a type of improv? Is that the thing that appealed to you?
Honestly, so as a performer, I try to do stuff that scares me. I try to keep myself active and engaged by, you know, trying stuff out. So I've dipped into stand-up a little bit. I've done all sorts of different other performance things. And I had been at a local wrestling show, and they did an announcement sort of in the intermission that a local training facility, the Lionsgate Dojo, were doing tryouts. I went to the tryout, and like I was sort of doing it just to say that I had done it. I thought it would be like a cool story to be, oh, the time I tried out to train as a wrestler. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. The cardio was intense. It was really, really difficult. And I think one of the things that sort of made me stood out is at the end, the last thing they wanted you to do is to cut a promo. So just, you know, deliver a little ad hoc speech about why you wanted to train here.
Yeah.
And that was easy. That was the easy part for me. And I think I was like, okay, that's the thing I'm good at.
Well, you have to sell it, right?
Yeah.
That's 95% of it.
Well, and so my tag team partner, he was in that same tryout. An amazing athlete. He blew through all the physical stuff, but like struggled with the the promo. And that was sort of what drove us together to be like, hey, like you've got this part, I've got this part. We have things that are in common and we really like each other. Let's make a go of this as a team. And yeah, I never expected it. Like I had a list of like, oh, here's the things that I want to do. And I sort of blew through those in the first, you know, 5 months of wrestling. So it's like, okay, now we've got bigger goals. We're friends with a guy who's part of a company called Totally Arctic Wrestling. They wrestle up in Inuvik and in Yellowknife, so we're hoping that we can get brought out there. And yeah, we're looking to take opportunities to perform all over Canada. Maybe Japan would be awesome, down into the States more. So it's going on.
What's your signature move?
I do a move with my tag team partner called the Panic Attack, as the Moral Panic.
Yeah.
Ali
loves it.
As myself, Rin Yoshino, his finisher move is the Deadly Leg Lock called the Yoshino Mercy.
Have you been hurt?
Not majorly. No, I've got. Every wrestler has a little, has like nicks and bruises. I've got a little bit of a bone chip in my elbow, so I always need to wear an elbow pad when I wrestle.
Yeah.
Otherwise, lots of pain. But thankfully, and I think part of it has been I've been trained very well, and also just as like somebody coming into wrestling as an older man, I see stuff that I'm like, that's cool, but not for me. Oh, yeah. There have been moves that I've like asked my trainers to teach me. I'm like, I've always loved this move. And they teach me how to do it, and I do it. And I'm like, ow, does it always really hurt your knees that hard? And they're like, yep. Okay, I guess I don't do that one.
Well, and I just think the farther down the food chain you are, the more likely it is that you're going to be wrestling against people that don't know what they're doing. And I know that that's a way to get yourself hurt.
We have been very, very fortunate to work against a lot of awesome people. So again, I would not say there's anybody that I've wrestled that I've been like, oof, this person should not be wrestling at all. But yeah, it can happen. And in those cases, part of it is being able to read the room, being able to see like, oh, is this person like going to take good care of me? And then, finding the polite ways to say no to some of their ideas. To be like, actually, you know what? That I'm not going to make you look good for that. So how about instead we try a different thing? Yeah.
Allie, are you good at wrestling?
Yes, of course. I'm good at everything.
You're a high school teacher. You have to be.
No, I'm
not. Not headlock.
Kids are misbehaving. Just, you know, pile driver through the table.
I use my charm. That is my signature wrestling move. Brent, that sounds exhausting.
Yeah, well, you know what? You don't get to have the fun of risking your body unless you risk your body. You don't get to, you know... don't play stupid games. You don't win stupid prizes.
That's true. And we all want stupid prizes, don't we?
Sometimes stupid prizes. Story in the world ever started with somebody said, so I made a series of really smart decisions.
Ooh.
No.
Yeah. If Brent was smart, he'd be working for MPI for 20 years, right? I mean, this is why we're all sitting here.
And
we're not,
living the cushy life.
Allie, are there any shows that you want to see?
Yeah, there are tons of shows I want to see. I find it really hard to see as many as I would like to when I am performing. I used to get my frequent Fringer pass and come to every show. I didn't do my first show myself in the Fringe until 2017. So I was catching everything. I've already seen 7 Minutes in Heaven, Kevin Galese. That was great.
He was our guest on FMK yesterday.
He's a gem. It's a great show. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you think. I saw Cactus Makes Perfect Improv. They were wonderful. They're also in Sweaty Venue 5. I want to see Bob Banks's show. I'm guesting tonight with the Cross-Eyed Rascals for their dark improv show, which thank goodness, because I can't do clean improv. not if they paid me to. And I'm guesting D&D and Commando show on Tuesday, so I would come check those out.
So you're popular.
I'm local. I'm so local, it hurts. Brent's talking about all of the different places he goes and things and traveling, and I'm like, oh, I just stay here in Winnipeg and teach my kids and do my little show. Thank you.
Well, that's part of the problem. At least in Vancouver, I can drive 2 hours and be in a different place. To drive 2 hours and be like at Grand Beach is not necessarily a lot of performance opportunities.
Correct, yeah.
Brent, what would you like to go see?
So many things. You can't see everything. I saw a bunch of the shows at PTE. Obviously, there's some heavy hitters there. Chase Padgett's show looks amazing. Mm-hmm. And I have too many friends, both local and touring, so I know I can't get to them all. Rob G's new poetry show. I saw AWOL. Amazing. But Rob was one of my favorite performers when I was just starting up, and for him to finally be back with a new poetry show, which is sort of his stock and trade, how he got started, I'm very excited for it. Tons of stuff to see. I'm also guesting on the D&D improv show tomorrow, so that's going to be fun, and I've already guested on the big improv show, so if you want to see me, you really got to come see FMK at the King's Head.
Amazing. The Nightmare Before Christmas is Ali Perlov. That is tomorrow at 4:15, a one human being potentially comedic performance, and that is at Son of Warehouse, which is upstairs from the warehouse. Brent Hirose is a cog in the wheel over at Fuck Mary Kill. The next show is tonight at 9 at the King's Head. Don't need to tell you where that is.
And if I can say something,
sure.
They open the doors 45 minutes beforehand, so if you want to get there at 8:15, go up, grab some food, grab a drink.
Have your curry,
Get out of the heat for a little bit. There's a spot for you.
We're going to have some more guests in a moment. My friend Bradley Graybeard has texted me and said I should play Pomp and Circumstance, which is a wrestling.
I was going to say you got to do something wrestling after that.
That's
Macho Man.
Okay.
Randy Savage.
Okay.
Macho Man.
Okay, so we will do that. Thank you so much, tag team champion Brent Hirose and painfully local Ali Perlov. Thank you both so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This is Pomp and Circumstance. Going to be back with some more guests. Just one moment. There's Randy the Macho Man Savage's theme, Pomp and Circumstance. Edward Elgar, I am Brother Kelly Hughes, Chaplain of the Arts, and broadcasting live from the Ivory Tower, CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Also, CKUW.ca worldwide. And in the space, it is 2:31 p.m., 28 degrees out. Thank you very much to Ali and Brent. I am on my last guests for the show today. And let's turn their mics on, because that would help. Heather Witherden.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
AKA your mom, Kathy. And Craig Charlson.
Hey, Kelly.
Who maybe has... Do you have an AKA? Do you have a nickname? Do you have a...
Big G.
Big G.
Okay.
That's my grandkids call me.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay. I thought you were just trying to make that up. Like, yeah.
No, I wasn't making it
up. Yeah. Call me T-Bone, yeah. They are doing shows. Heather is doing Moms, Older, Wiser, and Uncensored, starring Dee Dee Brazier and your mom, Kathy. That is at Colin Jackson Studio at PTE. You had one show. You're open last night, right?
We just opened last night, yeah.
And then you got a show at 5:30, so that's just in a couple of hours. And we have got ACT Now, a new comedy about artificial intelligence by Craig Turlson. That is at Venue 3, which is Théâtre Cercle Molière, which is out at CCFM. That is Tuesday at 10:15. Now you're already three shows in, Craig.
Yeah, we just finished the third show just this afternoon at 12:45. Had a great crowd. And I just want to say that you say the name of TCM way better than I do.
I was trying to say somebody's name earlier, and I completely butchered it. Who was it? It was Hope Figuera, and I completely botched it. But to be honest, I mean, this kind of, you know, Western kind of Ponderosa font,
that's a little hard to read.
It's a bit much. It kind of threw me off. I like everything to be, you know, we all like things to be big and visible, and, you know, we don't want anything to be, you ever like, I know they don't make CDs anymore, but you ever like look at a CD and there's like, you know, the little stuff is like in 3-point, you know, everything is just so much smaller than it used to be, mm-hmm. right?
I've noticed that actually a lot.
Yeah. So great to have you both here. Who's in your show, Craig?
My show has three actors, KB Greenhill, Zanifa Razul, Kim Kekagamek. Those are the three. Yeah, okay. Three actors. Yeah, amazing actors. Really, really good.
Real, real good. Really, really good.
Really, really good. Well, you know what's good about them is they're trained. They're actually.
Heather.
They all are
free balling it over here.
Because they're all like U of W grads, and they just like they know what they're doing a lot. And the director Rachel Lee Smith is also trained. Everybody's trained. I'm not trained, Kelly.
So how did you hook up with all these people that know what they're doing?
I'm not quite sure, actually. A lot of this started in the beer tent, and it kind of went from there.
All good things start in the beer tent.
Last summer, I talked to Kim. I said, Kim, I got an idea for a play. You want to be in it? Kim said, if you're writing it, I'll be in it. And then we began.
It's funny because the first guest that I had on today, Dana Graham, said that her show this year started in the King's Head, so almost the beer tent, and she was sitting there telling this story to Martin Dockery and a number of other people, and people just started coming around to listen to the story, and then at the end of it, they were like, this is a Fringe show, man.
Yep.
You've written a few Fringe shows. What number is this, Crank?
Four, yeah. Yep.
Does it get easier?
Well, and we were on air with you once, Kelly, maybe twice even, with my daughter and I. I got into this thing because of my daughter, and we used to co-write together and co-produce three shows together. That was a lot of fun, and she did it on her own last year, and I was sad. So I said, I'm going to take a shot at it this year, because she's taking a year off. So this year felt different because it was just me. So that was a little bit, no, it's not easier, but different.
So you had some FOMO.
I had huge FOMO. I was like, oh, I want to have a show, right?
Is she doing, is Reba doing a show this year?
No, she did a show last year, and then she did a show in the fall. She's focusing, Reba, my daughter, is focusing on some film stuff, and not doing a show this year. But
she's too big for Fringe. She's too
well,
good for Fringe.
Well, I don't know.
Just doing some different things. I get it.
Yeah, she's
doing
big.
Some different things, and she's left you behind.
She's left me in the dust, yeah. Kelly, is what it's happened.
Well, that's how it should be, right?
She wants to make that film money.
Isn't that right, Heather? You want your kids to leave you in the dust? And, you...
My kids left me in the dust a long time ago. I'm super dusty.
Heather, your show is with the great and fabulous Dee Dee Brazier.
Yes, our show began in the basement, the venue, the basement. But yeah, Dee Dee and I have known each other for a while now. But she,
what is the venue, the basement?
It's a comedy venue, and we also do burlesque.
Oh,
there.
Is it somewhere way out?
Yes, yeah, it's yeah, west on Portage, right. Almost near the perimeter.
Yeah.
It's in the old Howard Johnson's. And when we first went in there, my husband took a look at it, and he used to live and work in Portage La Prairie. And he said, ooh, this place, it used to be a real hug and slug, he said.
Okay.
What's like, it was a country bar. It was like a hug and slug.
Like kind of
like
slow-
a rough...
Slow is it slow dancing and
well you know you have enough punching, drinks and you're hugging people and you're slugging people.
Okay,
yeah.
Somebody, Rob G was here the other day and he introduced me to the expression budgie smuggler.
Oh yes,
you knew that. Do you know what that is, Craig?
I have zero idea.
It's like a Speedo.
It's the Australian version of a Speedo, but there's actually a brand called Budgie Smugglers too.
But I like did not know what he was talking about, and then he explained it to me, and I mean it made sense.
Think about
the
size of a budgie. Think about how you'd smuggle it.
Yeah, no, it made sense. It was very. I mean, Australia is such a strange place.
I heard a new expression.
Yeah.
That's an ish you, not an ish me.
Oh, I like that.
I like that too.
I'm going to borrow that.
Sorry, so the show started in the basement.
Yes.
The venue, the basement,
yeah,
old hug
said,
and slug. Yeah.
She heard that I used to be in a show. There was a show at gas station called Girls, 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 which was a fundraiser for them every year. And she said, we should do a show called Moms, Moms, Moms. And I went, yes.
And there you go. And now you're doing it. Is it really, I've lost it already. I've got too many things here. Is it truly uncensored?
Not horrible. Well, we have to Manitoba censor our bodies because different provinces have different nudity laws. So we have to keep our, we say it, we glue glittery tips on our naughty nips. So we have to keep our nipples covered and you have to keep your
G-string on.
Yeah.
What are the rules in Saskatchewan? Do you know what all the rules are in all the different
places?
It's
against the law. You can't even really do burlesque in Saskatchewan, despite the fact that they have a festival and they get a special license to do the festival. But no, it's really like they don't have strip clubs or any.
I take it back. Saskatchewan's weirder than Australia.
Yeah.
Where can you take it all off? I want to know where.
Quebec, certainly. Yeah. Ontario, I don't know. It's like, oddly, I don't really like go to a lot of strip clubs myself.
No.
No.
Well,
but,
it would be a real busman's holiday for you. Is the show fun? Do people like it?
Yes. I think we didn't, you know, it's always hard to tell right off the bat, like, are people, you know, there's stand-up in our show, there's burlesque in our show, there's monologues in our show, and they all sort of hit different emotional points, which is fantastic. And yeah, I think audiences were appreciating it. We ended up having to cut short a little bit last night because we ran out of time.
Oh.
So that's something that we're, but this was literally.
That's an issue.
Yes, it is. That's an ish me for sure. So we have to, you know, today we went through our show again and we went, okay, zit, zit, zit. This can go, because we don't want to miss out on that last act.
Now you have been known for a long time as being a stand-up, but I think, you know, probably you've been becoming more known as a person who takes her clothes off. What is it that you like about burlesque?
I love burlesque because, you know what, honestly, I say this in the show, but the crowds are more diverse and, you know, I feel more comfortable naked around burlesquers than I do clothed around comedians. probably safer too, actually.
Probably.
Let's get into it.
Yeah.
But no, it's true. There's a lot more women in comedy than there were when I was first, you know, around in the Winnipeg scene. And I was like a 37-year-old mom around a bunch of 23-year-old guys. And my husband would just say, well, have fun.
and there's way more burlesque than there used to be.
Yeah,
and Dee Dee, she is from BC and has been here for a couple of years, and there's all kinds of other people that do lady.
Yeah, yeah.
Fingerbang. What's her name?
Mila. Countess Mila von Fingerbang.
Countess Mila von Fingerbang.
So we have like a bunch of people that have, you know, progressed with themselves. They're, you know, they've gone from, you know, Mila was stage managing and then she decided, hey, I think I'd like to perform because she's also an extremely good costumer.
Yeah.
And then she went, you know, into producing shows because she knew what she wanted to see and wanted to have. So it's like a natural progression.
And it is an interesting thing because it really is, you know, we were talking about strip clubs, and I mean, strip clubs are, I think, driven by men and for men and whatever, but burlesque is very women heavy and is every once in a while you
and
see
heavy women.
Every once in a while you see a dude or two, and what is your audience makeup, do you think, if you had to guess?
I would say probably like 70-30. And like I said, it's just
70 what?
Women.
Yeah.
Yeah, women, and you know, like just it's not
non-binary peeps and whatever. Yeah,
exactly, right? It's not, I shouldn't say it's not a cis male activity, but it's kind of not in the way that I see comedy, you know. That's still pretty much a lot of cis white guys.
But it's I mean, it's gatekeeping, right?
It can be, you know, like.
Well, but all these, it's all I mean, open mics are always run by dudes.
Yes, so. And who's at outdoor comedy this week? You know, Nate Bargatze and Bill Burr and
whatever his name is. Yeah,
Bill, Bobby Lee. I mean, you know, great.
Yeah.
And a bunch of local comedians as well. But I didn't see a lot of ladies.
So, I mean, did you kind of get sick of all that?
I just saw another way.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go where you feel at home.
Yeah.
And somebody asked me if I was interested in hosting burlesque because I was doing comedy. And they said, oh, my God, you're practically doing burlesque already. Like, just look at this, your joke telling style, just your personal style. Yeah. Like, come host my shows. And it just went off like a rocket.
Yeah. And I wonder if you're a little bit like me and you don't want to do a bunch of prep work, but you're really good with the crowd and you're really good with the, you know, yeah. Right?
100%. That's why I love emceeing. I don't have to be up there for half an hour doing a big half hour set that I, you know, have worked on and worked on. I mean, I have jokes, I have comments, I have ADHD, and my reaction and my comments are usually pretty funny. If they don't get them, I just go, well, that's an issue, not an issue.
And a lot of these, you know, these people, you know, they can write a set, they can go up and do it. But if you ask them to host something, I mean, they couldn't do it to save their life, right?
No,
to me, it seems like a different skill set.
It is a little bit of a different skill set. And, you know, I really love it, though, because it really, I don't know, to me, it feels very community building, right? Because I get to meet everyone. I see everyone. I see them perform. I see what they do. I'm able to hype them up, which is your job as your MC. And I just feel like, you know, I'm good at doing that. And the whole mom character kind of also plays into that.
Yeah. And it feels more collaborative than, you know, the burlesque feels more collaborative when there's a show. It feels like a show as opposed to just a bunch of people on a comedy thing where they're all going up and doing their thing. And then, you know what I mean? Like it feels like a different kind of a jam.
It is a different environment.
Craig, what year did you write your first Fringe show?
Maybe about 2017 or 16 or something like that. I did want to out myself, though, as both growing up in Saskatchewan, cisgendered, who enjoys burlesque.
We accept you. Oh, high five.
No, I do. Do you know Holly?
Yes.
Yeah, Holly's billeted into my house.
Oh, excellent.
And so Holly's a burlesque performer, was here for Burlesque Fest.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's wonderful. I can't remember her last name.
Brinkman.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. And she's doing a show, too.
Yeah, she was on here a couple days ago. Yeah,
oh, she's great. Fantastic. Yeah.
We're sharing a venue with her because we're going to Edmonton as well.
Oh, super.
Oh, that's
she's
exciting.
She's a wonderful human. So, yeah, no, around 17, something like that. I'm not so good with years.
Are you a late bloomer?
As a fringer?
Yeah.
Or as a what? I mean, I've been a writer for a long time.
I guess I want to know about as a fringe, or I don't want to know about, you know, when you lost your V card. That's not really.
Okay, let's get into it.
Let's talk puberty. No, I've always been a writer, but I got into fringe because of my daughter, you know, and so really I have to admit the last play I wrote was way back in college, and I wanted my daughter to work with me on the script, and she did, and we learned a lot together. We learned how to fight. We learned how to get along, and every show has been just kind of just tighter and better, and kind of a little bit of addicted now. So late bloomer to fringe, not late bloomer to, like, I've written about 6 or 7 novels now. So
are they out in the world?
The novels? Oh, yeah. Yeah. In fact, I released 2 novels last year. You can get them. I think McNally has some. There's Amazon as well. But I write crime fiction.
Do you write under the name Big G?
What?
Do you write under the name Big G?
I'm going to start. I'll tell you the Big G story just really fast, that I was a grandfather at 49, and I didn't like the term grandfather.
Yeah.
So the kids wanted to call me something. So they came up with Big G, which sounded a bit of a rapper name.
Sure, yeah.
And I was okay with that. Yeah, so they either call me Big G or just G.
You can't see here because radio is not a visual medium, but Craig has got big gold chains around his neck and diamonds on his teeth. So
lots of bling.
Is very, very appropriate.
No. I came prepared.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, there you go. Yeah. Look at this. We shake them.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Well, is bling right there.
He
right?
Is, too bad this isn't television.
Too bad, yeah.
Just everyone, shake it around like...
Yeah, shake it.
That's the bling.
Shake what your mama gave you.
Right?
What's the show about?
This show, you asked about the first one I wrote. The first one I wrote was called Filter This, about social media. And I always write comedies, and I like looking at what's going on, just kind of in the human condition and society, et cetera, et cetera. And the big things going on right now is AI, artificial intelligence. And I wanted to write a comedy about artificial intelligence and about the difficulty of decision-making, because we really have a hard time. There's so many things to decide on in our life, and there's a lot of anxiety. And I said, those are things that could come together and be funny.
Do you have trouble making decisions?
I do not at all. But I've met people who do.
Heather?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you?
Would you like Craig to make your decisions for you?
No, I'll let ChatGPT do it.
It depends kind of where I'm at, because I am ADHD, and also I'm bipolar. And so sometimes when I'm on, when I'm kind of like on my game, I can make decisions left and right.
Yep.
And then other times, like, I will literally sit there for 25 minutes trying to find something on Netflix and can't commit to anything. And then just, you know what
totally.
I mean? Nothing.
Totally get it.
So,
well, I think the thing is like my mom was bipolar. She's gone now, but I, you know, watched what she would do as what you explained, Kelly, that kind of those two sides of it. And I think what fascinated me about the app world, we always use apps, that apps will lock on you if you don't pay for the full version, or they'll do something, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, this lead character, she gets this app called ACK, Anticipatory Cerebral Knowledge.
Yeah.
That's why it's called app. And the third decision, if you don't pay, locks. And it goes forward in reality, no matter what it is. Because she's watching her avatar make decisions. But the third one locks, because it's a very good app.
So it's a bit science fiction-y.
It's very science fiction-y, you know? And I think that people would say to me, oh, this is like Black Mirror.
Yeah, I was gonna
and I
say.
Said, yeah, it's like Black Mirror, which I've never seen. But I know what Black Mirror is about, you know? So it does definitely sci-fi.
Okay, so you're heading off accusations of plagiarism right now. Do you feel like, are you pretty plugged into all the tech stuff and whatever? I mean, you're older.
Thanks,
Kelly. I couldn't think of a way to say that. You are a big G, but I find like certain things like TikTok and various things, like for me, because I use social media a lot, but certain things, you know, like, only old people like us are on Facebook, right? Young people are doing something else, whatever they are, and the TikToks or whatever the newer things are. And I see that stuff and I never get it. You know what I mean? Because it's not for me, right? And I go like, what is this and why is this? You know, I watched something the other day that was like some show that's like a Korean kids, they speak English, but it's like Korean kids that are in this high school, and it's a show, and it's 11 minutes long. I can't remember what it was called, and it's got like billions of views. And I watched it the other day to see what the big deal was, and I was just like, what the, you know, like,
did it make sense to your brain?
Yeah, because it was not for me. So do you feel like you're pretty plugged into that?
I'm the most plugged in one in my family. I'm an early adopter. I was on all the social media channels before any of my kids were. You can find me on Twitter, because I'm not going to call it the other thing. You can follow
Twitter is a cesspool of hate. Is that the other word you want?
It can be, but the thing is if you can avoid it too. I have around 5,000 followers on Twitter, so I'm not going to dump that. And TikTok's new for me. I've been on TikTok for a while. You can find lots about the show on TikTok.
I was banned from Facebook for I've been banned for various things in the last number of ones for like 30 days. And one was because I called the Freedom Convoy the cracker train. Ostensibly equivalent to other things that you could say, but it's not. It's really not the same as the words that I'm not going to say what they are, but I guess they had to kind of maintain some kind of false equivalency. So I got banned for 30 days for that. There was another one where a friend of mine, his wife was saying, you know, Matthew's out of work and he, you know, he can do this and that and whatever. And she posted a picture of him and he was dressed up and whatever. And I said, I made a comment and I said, something to the effect of, you know, I'd pay to have sex with him. There was some kind of thing like that was funny, but I got banned for a month for soliciting sex, which is insane.
Hopefully, he wasn't a minor.
No. He's like our age, but no, it was a very strange thing. But I did, so when I was banned, I jumped on TikTok, and it was during the whole Freedom Convoy thing, and I posted some video because I saw the Freedom Convoy, and I did not set my settings to followers only. I had it set to everyone, and I got jumped on by all these insane Freedom Convoy people that just like all these people all over the country that attacked me, and they were just, I mean, you remember how angry everybody was, like kind of around that time near the end of the pandemic. I mean, people were just like, people everywhere, people on all the sides. I mean, I yelled at some guy in Dollarama when you were supposed to wear your mask and he wouldn't wear a mask. I just lost my shit on him because I'm just like, I've got, I had a friend, and she's passed away now, but I had a friend who, you know, had a serious health problem. And if she had had to get in to the hospital, she couldn't because the ICUs were full of all these people who had COVID because they weren't getting vaccinated. Like, just, you know, so I just kind of, you know, but I had all these people jump on me, and then I was like, okay, I got to get out because there were so many. So yeah, I think you do have to kind of find a way to sort of edit those people out.
Well, I think blocking people is great. There are ways to do it. I mean, and that's why, like, I'm not going to defend what Elon does with his crazy platform, but I have great friends. I have great friends that I developed over the years, and it's what you need to avoid. You can avoid the poison. You can avoid the political diatribe and find community. There's a lot of writers.
Yeah. Heather, what shows do you want to go see?
Oh, what shows do I want to go see? I want to see, what's it called? Oh, I want to see Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard good things about that. Ironically, because it's a drumming show. I want to see the Get Laid show.
Yeah.
Which has been selling out, Ronnie's show.
Yeah,
I also want to see... it's called Runaway something.
Runaway Train? Runaway Runaway Bride?
I don't know. She's got Hookers and Heroin in her title.
Okay. Well, that works for me.
Mary Goggins. I just met her.
Mary Goggins? Is that like Mary Poppins? But
almost.
Almost.
Yeah.
What would you like to go see, Craig?
I'm really hoping, probably right after this interview, I want to go to see Inghy's Fingies.
Oh, yeah.
Because I saw Epidermis Circus, and it's one of the best things I've ever seen.
Ingrid is brilliant. Yeah, for sure.
Incredible.
For sure. Well, this is about time for us. Act Now is a new comedy about artificial intelligence by Craig Turlson, directed by Rachel E. Smith, starring a bunch of very talented folks. And that is Venue 3, Théâtre Cercle Molière, at Tuesday, 10:15 is the next show. And that is That is him. And then Moms, Moms, Moms is Dee Dee Brazier and your mom, Kathy, at PTE Colin Jackson Studio. And they are taping bits to their nasty nips or something.
That's right.
Something, I don't know what you said. And that is actually today at 5:30. So that's just in a couple of hours. And so you should go check that out. And since you said Runaway, I'm going to play us out, I think, with Del Shannon's Runaway.
Oh, yeah.
Because why not?
Why not?
Perfect.
Thank you so much, Heather, for coming in.
Thank you.
Now you're supposed to say, yeah, thanks, whatever.
Thank you. Thank you, Kelly.
I mean, not thank you, but see you later, whatever. I'm not trying to beg you to thank me. Craig, thank you.
You're the man, Kelly.
Okay, there you go.
Au revoir.
Thank you so much. This has been the Ivory Tower Special Fringe Fest edition. We have got a bunch more stuff for you tomorrow. And if I grab my page here, tomorrow I'm on a special time at, I think, 3 o'clock. Patrick Gregoire, Sean O'Hara, Blair Morrow, Brett Hogan, Brody Sjoden, Christopher Douglas, Joseph Aragon, Hayden Mains, Bremner Duthie, Rob Teska, and John Michael. So tune in to that. Thank you so much. We will talk to you tomorrow. Art will save us all. This is a song for you. Runaway. Del Shannon. Talk to you tomorrow.
As I walk along, I wonder what went wrong with our love, a love that was so strong. And as I still walk on, I think of the things we've done together.